Williams, Ricketts, Morrow, Moore, Johnson, Irwin, Giovinco, Andu, Delgado, Cooper, Cheru, Bradley, Mono, Bloom, Bezor, Bubbly, Altidore, Perky.
Wow.
Not a bad season, fellas. Let's review. Part 3. The Homestand.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
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 Can I kick it?
Wow, big voice guy. Chicka, 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 what? TFC. Big voice guy. Dan Rachel, Thomas Michalakos, welcome in. TFC Pitchside, the final of our trilogy of season in review shows.
I have to give props to Bozy and the big voice guy on that one. That was solid.
It's really all Bozy. Like, the big voice guy, he just, like, sits in a room all day and he just reads. Easiest job in the world, and he makes, like, nine figures. So, like,
Bozy's tracking him down, running around, getting him to, you know, voice over everything that we need. And yeah, really good, really good.
Personally, it's my favorite when he says, Thomas, lay off the spanakopita.
Yeah, that's my favorite too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It is quite good.
Delgado, just in case.
Not so much sometimes, but, you know, majority of the time, yeah, I'd say.
That was a bit of a miss.
Give him the benefit of the doubt.
Dan Rachel, Thomas Michalakos, TFC pitch side. This one is called The Home Stretch, as the trilogy of season in review shows comes to a close. And what better time than now, because we're like a month away from, or 2 months away from the season starting, and we're less than a month away from preseason starting. So
I get it, the home stretch. I get it. But we were talking about this and saying, like, judging by our rundown, what should have this part three been called? What's the trend in this rundown?
Josie Altidore proves his worth to Toronto FC.
Spoken like a pro, Dan.
Yeah. That's pretty much what it was.
It was.
Like, this would be like the home stretch, but the disclaimer is Josie Altidore was really awesome. Like, that would be the guy in the background speaking really fast, like telling you subliminally what the message is in this show.
Next year, we'll have the big voice guy with, like, these type of messages where Bozy can just go to.
The home stretch. Sebastian Giovinco gets hurt and Josie Altidore becomes really, 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 really good.
Trademark TFC pitch right.
Yeah. There it is. Done. Show's done. All right. See you later. See you in the new year. Season starting in a month. Super draft January 16th.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, there is lots more. We're going to go through every game as we have in the last couple of shows. We finished it off with July 31st at BMO Field, Toronto FC and a 3-0 win over the Columbus Crew. August 3rd, a Wednesday at BMO, was Toronto FC back into action again. 1-0 win over Real Salt Lake. The goal coming in from the new guy, the Canadian international, leading scorer among active Canadian internationals, to St. Ricketts.
Not even close to being onside. Comes towards Tossin. Ricketts is Ricketts! Tossin Ricketts, the Canadian international, breaks the deadlock here with his first Toronto FC goal.
Yeah, there it is. First TFC goal for Ricketts. A big one. They get a big win over a good team in the Western Conference. Real Salt Lake, you saw the diamond formation again. This was still a part in the season where, like, TFC was all about their young midfield because Bradley was still out hurt. You had Will Johnson still out hurt. You had Benoit Cheroux out hurt. So midfield-wise, this was Jay Chapman, Tsubasa Endo, Jonathan Osorio, and Marky Delgado as the four-man midfield.
Yeah, but the main thing here is what we saw with Altidore, Gio, and Ricketts, the three, the trident. This is when we started talking about, oh my God, these three players together. Wow. What else can they do?
Yeah, because it's a scoreless game. And then Vanny, I think he made a double switch in this game. Put them on at the exact same time, saying, we're at home. We're going for it. Altidore, Ricketts,
3 points.
Subbed on. And then shortly thereafter, Ricketts gets the goal that puts TFC in front. And it works absolutely to perfection. Alex Bono was still the starter, and outside of the San Jose game, he was pretty much impeccable as the TFC starter, and it was his 7th start since Irwin went down, had a record of 4 wins, 1 loss, and 2 draws. It was also TFC's 3rd straight win at home. They continued on August 6th at BMO Field, a 4-1 win over the New England Revolution, a team that in years past was always a thorn in the side of TFC, but Sebastian Giovinco gets the hat trick, another one of his hat tricks, and this was a game where He scored some pretty incredible goals, if I remember correctly, as well.
Comes in low, flicked on, away by Kofi. Chapman there, back to Bradley. Bradley tries to keep it alive. Giovinco from a bad angle, scores! Giovinco! No such thing as a bad angle for him! Giovinco tries to track that down, can't get there ahead of Rowe. Bloom is up there as well. Oh, and Rowe takes a bit of a shot at Bloom. Play carries on. Giovinco curls one! Osorio taking his time and does it well, goes down in the box, and it's a penalty. Giovinco, two terrific strikes to make it 2-0. Can he add the third here? And he does. It's 3-0 Toronto. It's 15 goals for Giovinco on the season.
Pretty good. That's Sebastian Giovinco. I tell you, Thomas, he's pretty good.
Second hat trick in 14 game in 14 days. Two hat tricks in 14 days.
What is a hat trick?
Sorry.
Sounds like a
misstep. Misstep.
Was that your Italian accent on a hat trick?
That was kind of my Greek.
Ah, nice. A hat trick.
The hat trick. Yes. But 14 days, two hat tricks, 7 goals.
And that was maybe one of the best goals of the TFC season. The first one you heard in that Jerry Dobson montage was he's on the right side of the field, attacking the north end of BMO Field. Curls it with the outside of his boot onto the far post. An absolutely brilliant goal from Sebastian Giovinco, as we've seen him do so many times. But it's also 93rd minute. Jozy Altidore getting on the score sheet once again for TFC. And, I mean, this is a pretty big game for TFC, because they're bludgeoning teams. And you're starting to see the potential of what they could be when working at full strength.
Michael, stop playing with your phone.
Michael Bradley was back. I'm talking with my hands, and it's
like, and the phone almost caught me in the face.
I almost threw it at you. But this is also a game where Sebastian Giovinco stole Bozy's Instagram photo. Not cool. We don't like when players do that. Just ask. We're not going to charge you or anything. Just ask. Give cred. It's not hard. Especially you, Giovinco. You know what bothers me about Giovinco's Instagram game? Like, he'll put up a story.
You actually have
something
that bothers
you? But it's just like a picture
you?
Of something completely nondescript, and you have no idea what he's showing you. What? If I'm following you on Instagram, Seba, I want to know what you're doing.
It's like a Jackson Pollock
You can't
painting.
Just take a picture of an empty street, and I'm going to understand what this is.
It's like a Jackson Pollock painting. You look at it, and whatever it is, to everyone.
It's art.
It's art.
After this game, TFC sat 1 point back of New York City FC of the East. They had a bunch of games in hand, and you're wondering, see, be Supporters Shield winners? It was very much a real possibility at this point. They headed to Houston, BBVA Stadium, a game that was supposed to be played on a Saturday night. Instead, rain, and lots of it, caused that to not be possible. So they moved the game to Sunday. TFC, kind of tired, kind of in bad shape after having to wait around in Houston, wait around in the rain. They had to wait again to start the game on the Sunday.
And more waiting and more waiting.
And it was hot and it was humid. It was gross. But even after going down 1-0, they found a way to get the equalizer.
Giovinco outside of the foot pass. Racing forward now as Marky Delgado whips across, and the diving header. And I think Joe Willis got a hand on it. He did. It's going to be a corner, Toronto FC. Jozy Altidore catapulted through the air, threw himself at the delivery, and almost scores a spectacular goal. Giovinco to take it. Towards the top of the box, low Altidore's wide open, and what a goal! It is hit with a ton of power. And Jozy Altidore pounding his fist in the air here after being denied off the head has just scored an amazing goal for Toronto FC.
Yeah, that was an interesting couple of minutes for Jozy, and you were starting to see his impact because he has a great diving header chance. Looks like Robin Van Persie, like a flying fish in the air, and just missed it. But then immediately scores a beauty of a goal right after that.
And but that celebration, I remember vividly how he was just pounding his chest and he was into it. You could tell the desire was always there, but physically he was
feeling it.
Yeah.
Third goal in 4 matches for Jozy Altidore at that point. And this was also another game where you saw TFC struggle against a 10-man side because Houston had a red card in this game. TFC were up a man for a large stretch of it. and were pounding at the door all night long, but could not find a way to break through the Houston defense and get the winning goal. And so you had a lot of people who listen to this show getting continuously frustrated with the fact that they could not beat a 10-man team. But at the same time, TFC unbeaten in 5 at the time. Houston were winless in 6.
The road point thing that everyone keeps going to.
And
always.
They were still very much in place to win the supporter shield at this point in the season. After that, it was a game going to Talon Energy Stadium in Philly. And in the pre-match lead-up, we spoke with a man from Philly.com. That is Kevin Kincaid.
Kevin, didn't expect Philly to be good this year. I'm going to be honest, especially after last year. It's been quite the turnaround.
No, yeah, I don't think we expected much of anything this year. You know, when Ernie Stewart came in, I think we were thinking, hey, this is the start of something, and they're at least building towards something feasible here. But, yeah, I don't think anybody expected them to be close to the top of the Eastern Conference just 1 year in. So, yeah, it's different days for Toronto and Philly, that's for sure.
Yeah, just 3 points away from matching last year's point haul. So it's been impressive to watch. And then mid-season, they bring in Alejandro Bedoya, and he looks fantastic in his first game. The team looks fantastic in his first game. What exactly does Bedoya bring to this Union side?
Well, right now what he brings is that he sort of plugs a gap in the formation, and by a gap, I mean a gaping hole that was left when Vincent Nogueira left and he went back to France. And basically what happened was that Nogueira was a really, really good number 8, a box-to-box ball mover, a defensive midfielder who really liked to get on the ball, and he helped get it from back to front. He was just a facilitator for them. And they really didn't have that after he left. Tranquil Barneta went back there, and he played a little bit of it, but it's just not really his role. So when Bedoya came in, they plugged him right into that number 8. And the 4-0 win against the Revolution on the weekend, he didn't really do much of anything that was that crazy. You know, he quietly just sort of kept the defensive shape, moved the ball back and forth. And it allowed Tranquil Barneta to get back in, up into the number 10, where he's been much better this year. So he just kind of, calms the nerves a little bit, and he brings some stability that they needed, because over the last like 5 or 6, they've been giving up a lot of goals. So his addition to the team is timely.
And there is Kevin Kincaid talking about a struggling Philly team who started hot, but the way the season had gone, they were really slowing down as the season went along, and how Jim Curtin was trying to fix those issues. Also, this was around the time, Thomas, August 18th, I believe was the exact date.
Yes.
Of the signing, which you hated at the time.
No, I didn't hate.
You hated it. Skeptical.
I didn't know who he was.
Yes.
I didn't know who he was. I believe I said he was from Honduras when he was from Panama.
Correct.
I caught a lot of flack for that, but I'm sorry. My CONCACAF
More
radar.
More than you know, Thomas. Yeah. More than you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was the time when TFC brought in Armando Cooper on loan.
And one of the greatest things of the season was born.
A certain call was born.
Oh. In my personal opinion, it was the greatest thing to come out of this show was Dan just obliterating.
Stop it. I'm blushing.
You are blushing. I can see it from here. Your eyeglasses are steaming and everything.
Match preview time, and Benvenuto Armando Cooper. Like, that's the only thing that Panamanian goal clip was missing, is the guy actually saying all those things in Spanish and then having to say Cooper, right? Because goal, Armando Cooper.
I swear. You get more joy out of doing it than I do get out of hearing it.
That was a match preview for this game in Philly.
Do you ever do that? Do you wake up, you see yourself, you're in the shower or anything like that? Does that ever come out outside of the studio? I believe it does. I think you're going to lie.
I have a cousin who calls me now just to ask me to do it.
See?
It's kind of annoying.
It's growing.
Yeah. But that's where it was born, on a match preview show, which we do for every weekend game of the TFC season.
The mind of Riccio.
And this
scary one
was a Philadelphia Union tie, a team that TFC was very much in the mix with throughout the season in the Eastern Conference. But as we've mentioned, TFC were kind of hitting their stride, And they certainly looked it in this game. A beautiful goal for Sebastian Giovinco to start it. Philly responds. But then, an interesting point in time at Philadelphia.
Yes.
The fans in Philly, as they are known to be...
Brutal fans. Brutal.
Kind of idiots, to put it fairly, I think. Chanting overrated at one Michael Bradley. Yes, the captain of their U.S. national team. They were chanting overrated at him as he steps over a restart for TFC.
Here's Bradley. It's into the mixer. Oh, and what a finish by Drew Moore. And it's 2-1.
And another free kick goal, this time from Toronto.
Yeah, it was Drew Moore with the diving header to get TFC out in front. Jerry Dobson, Paul Dolan on the call.
See, Philly fans are known for being, you know, crazy, maniacal, loyal, but... You know,
stupid, over the top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Intelligent, right? Yep.
Irrational.
Just everything.
Intelligent.
Yeah. I threw that in there just to see what you would say.
Yeah.
Obviously not intelligent in the sense where, sure, he might be overrated for Team USA, but for TFC, he's an MVP.
Not on this show. Not on this show is Michael Bradley.
No.
Overrated.
Not in this city.
Before the half, TFC making a hat trick of goals.
Johnson for Altidore. Good work by the strong Altidore. Oh, my goodness. There's the value of a bull like Jose Altidore.
That's a sensational goal from Jose Altidore.
Marshawn Lynch would applaud the beast mode that Jose Altidore just went into there.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that was an incredible moment in the season. That, like, if you were still on the fence of Jose Altidore being a major part of what TFC was kind of building at this point in the season, you were off your rocker.
You know what? I'm still stuck on the overrated chance.
Of course you are.
I totally forgot about that. How crazy is that?
So TFC end up winning this one 3-1. They shut it down in the second half. Will Johnson and Michael Bradley are back in the starting 11. So things are starting to point upward for TFC. Also put up this performance after a 4-0 victory over New England the week prior, did the Philadelphia Union. Just goes to show where New England was at this time of the season. But also a side note, the Chicago Fire beat Montreal
this week
in Montreal, snapping a 2-year road winless drought. They hadn't won on the road since July 12, 2014.
This is when the sirens went off with Montreal Impact fans. Twitter was going nuts. They couldn't believe they lost to the Fire.
It was 36 away games straight without a win. And it wasn't like a close one. It was, what was it? 2-0? 3-0? Like, it was an absolute drubbing at the hands of the Chicago Fire for the Montreal Impact.
That whistle sounds so sweet. August 20th, 2016. As they like to say here in French Canada, the road winless streak is fini.
Oh, rubbing it in, a little bit. Fini.
Is that how you say finished in French?
I think so.
I don't know. I'm not quality control here on TFC pitch side.
I got 50,
I don't speak much French.
I got 51% in French, so my word isn't anything to you.
The words that I know in French are not ones that you should say. I know Je m'appelle Daniel, and that's it.
I think that's all you need.
Yeah. That's how I got around in Montreal, that when we went later in the season. New franchise record for TFC, 14 points in 6 games. This was our August 22nd episode, was also our tragically hip episode, as news of Gord Downie's health issues were a big point of Canadian news at this point in the summer, and we addressed that with our own little tributes via producer Emil Detlich by playing plenty of Tragically Hip on this August 22nd episode. It's also a show where Tim Bezpachenko joined the show to talk about the Armando Cooper edition and paperwork issues, plus MLS expansion. Obviously, the big news came last week on your end of things, and that is Armando Cooper coming in on loan with an option to buy, we understand. But really, all of our listeners seem to want to know is how exactly this was able to come through 2 weeks after the deadline.
Yeah, so let me explain a little bit. So loans, as our listeners and our soccer fans know, there's a transfer window that's open for the beginning of the year for about 3 months and then 1 month during the summer. And if you're acquiring a player either via transfer or loan from another club, it has to happen during this window. And what happened with Armando was that all of the documents were uploaded into the system and what we believed we effectuated the entire transfer and finished before the deadline. But the computer just wasn't showing that it was complete. And so the deadline kind of came and went. And from our end, everything was done. But then from Panama's end, it sounded like they weren't ever able to get everything done. And so they appealed, and we supported their appeal to FIFA. And then FIFA looked at the facts and said, look, even though it's after the deadline, you, in effect, had all of the documents in and everything was completed. And it was either a technical issue or some other issue that they essentially forgave on the Panama side and said, hey, the player his IT is being transferred to the Canadian Soccer Association, and he's free to play with TFC. So, you know, in the end, it was done before the deadline, but we had to collect all the facts, the evidence, submit it to FIFA, and then they made the ruling, which is why there was a 2-week delay.
We gotta get Panama hooked up with some Rogers high speed internet. You know, it's great.
That is right. That is right.
I'm still a company man, Tim. You know that. But in any case, Armando Cooper.
Guy would appreciate that.
Sure. He certainly would. I hope he's listening.
Staying with long term, by 2018, there's going to be 23 MLS franchises. It's 11 teams in over the last decade that are brand new, that come into the league. Do you feel that the MLS is overextending itself and growing too big too fast?
You know, I personally don't, because I do feel like we're just scratching the surface of the type of players that will actually want to come in our league. We have I don't know the total number of professional soccer players worldwide, but, you know, suffice it to say that many of them look to MLS as a potential destination. So there's a pool of talent out there that, frankly, we just need to use our resources to get out there, scout more, scout better, get deeper. And then it also behooves our teams to go out and, you know, there's only really a few teams that are really committing a lot of resources in the youth space, and that obviously I include TFC as one of those teams. But there are many ways to build a deep roster, and you don't have to look at your current roster or rely on the MLS Super Draft for just talent like maybe some of the other leagues in North America. So I'm not too concerned about it. I do think some of the resources in terms of the league, the number of people working at the league office, they obviously get stretched thin. You have the league ops, you have in terms of what stadiums teams are playing in. I think those things are more actually of a concern, at least for me personally, speaking for myself, than maybe the player pool.
We also talked to Matthew Doyle on this show, and just as we speak.
Yeah. Oh. What's the timing on that?
Mm. Yeah, it's not great. I will mention that later in the show. We're watching Jozy Altidore's header from the final, but that's... it's just foreshadowing for what's to come later in the show. This was also an episode, August 22nd, where we get back on time, where Matthew Doyle joined the show. He had some harsh words on his own podcast, Extra Time Radio, for MLS, about Drew Moore and how Drew was playing. But then we also had Drew play very well in this game against the Philadelphia Union. So we had Matthew Doyle on the show to talk about it.
Well, fall apart. Hey, it's Drew Moore, and you're listening to TSP Pitch Side.
And with Toronto FC, there is a canary in the coal mine. They've played really well since June, but Drew Moore's legs look dead to me against Houston.
Bradley has targets. He'll try to put this one in. Maybe Altidore played in. That's Altidore. It goes by in the header, and there's another one. Drew Moore, 2-1, Toronto.
Well, you won't even let me talk. To you.
What are you doing?
How does his legs look now? Hey, how do they look now? Hey,
Matthew Doyle is going to join us in just a second. Would you let me intro the show first?
I had to let that go.
Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. This is TFC Pitch Side. Yes, Drew Moore with the goal over the weekend. And that voice, that clip you heard, is the MLS analyst himself on Extra Time Radio talking about Drew Moore. Maybe in a bit of a negative light. Matt... Look, we actually just talked about TFC's defense not looking the greatest, but Drew Moore, he's having quite the goal scoring year. I guess that helps a little bit.
I mean, yeah, any way you can pick up the slack a little bit, clearly what he did this past weekend. So, no complaints there.
But we did hear you on Extra Time Radio. Drew Moore is... he has had moments this year where he's looked great, and I think more than anything, I think his leadership... has provided some stability to TFC's defense, but There have been times when he hasn't looked the most fleet of foot. Do you think TFC's defense could still be an issue, even though on the surface right now it has looked pretty good for the course of the season?
No, I actually don't. And I think the way that they're built, they're going to be really good in the playoffs. You know, about a month ago, as things were sort of shaping up and things were sort of being figured out on the offensive side of the ball, I went out on a limb and I said that I think TFC have a pretty decent shot at winning the Shield. And I mean, there are two caveats there: the health of Jovinko, obviously, and the health of Drew Moore, because they don't really have a replacement for him in terms of organizing the game and in terms of keeping guys like Josh Williams, who's still more athlete than soccer player, or Eric Zavaleta, who doesn't have a ton of experience, or even, you know, the goalkeeper, Alex Bono, keeping them all sort of compacted on the same page. So, I still maintain that, again, if you look at how Moore played against Houston, it wasn't that he is slow. It's that he did look a little bit leggy. He did look like his reactions were a cut or two below what we normally see from him. And I still think that is one of the worries. It's not that Drew Moore is a bad player. Quite the contrary. I think he's in the mix for best 11 and defender of the year. It's that he's, you know, 31, 32 years old, and he's playing over 2,000 minutes now for the first time since, I want to say, 2012. And that can wear you down over the course of the season, especially during a week like this in which they have 3 games in 8 days.
The truth is, Drew Moore asked us to put you on the spot here, Matt. Yeah, no, we were just kidding with Matt at that point. But he made some good points, you know.
But his predictions never come to fruition, though. That's the ongoing thing with
that. Somewhat true, yes. But Drew, he was right about Drew Moore in that he was being used quite a bit by Greg Vanney and TFC.
His final minutes tell you that.
Had not played more than 2,000, had not gotten close to 3,000 since 2013, and by the end of it, he had a whole whack of minutes. So you wondered about his age and how that would factor in. Would he hit a wall at some point? As you know now, Drew Moore was pretty clutch throughout the entire year. August 24th, Camping World Stadium. We go back to the place where Ishmael Alfath stole a point out of the grips of TFC's hands, and they got back what they deserved from earlier in the year.
Altidore! Jose Altidore! He scores. It's 2-1.
Ew. Ew.
Not a fan of Vic?
Oh, my God. What did he say? Say it again.
Altidorable. He scores. It's 2-1.
Cringe. Cringe.
He also said Jose instead of Josie.
Look, I can't rag on anyone for butchering names. I butcher them all the time.
Well, you know what was one awkward part of the second leg?
But that's bad.
You know what was one awkward part about calling the second leg with Jim Brennan?
What?
He kept calling Altidore Altidore. And I didn't know. I didn't want to correct him in the middle of the broadcast.
Because then he looks at you and go, yeah, we're buddies. I know how to say it. Do you know him personally on a personal level? No, you don't.
So it was a bit weird. But
as a company man, Dan, you should have corrected him.
Maybe. But Altidorable.
Yeah, that trumps all.
I respect Vic and what he does. But Altidorable?
What he does well? No.
In that 11 for TFC, Alex Bono in goal, Nick Haglund, Drew Moore, Josh Williams, the back three, Jonathan Osorio, Jay Chapman, Michael Bradley, Marky Delgado, and Daniel Lovitz playing in behind Sebastian Giovinco into St. Ricketts in that midfield. So it was a bit interesting, or maybe TSN's graphic was a little bit off. Either one, very possible. TFC were first place in the East after this win, 43 points, two more than New York City FC.
Fans were riding the wave of positive results.
Right. And at this point in the season, you know, Altidore was still doing very well, but he wasn't, you know, Greg Vanney was still very wary about his minutes at the time. And he did not, I don't believe he started this game, if I do remember correctly. It was a 2-1 win at Orlando, and he had 32 minutes. Yeah, so he did not start this game. He came on as a substitute with all of TFC's games piling up. He wasn't playing 90 minutes at that point. Greg Vanney was making sure to take him off at the 70-minute point, so it was all about building Jozy Altidore towards the playoff stretch. Bono had started 11 straight games, allowing 9 goals and posting 3 clean sheets. TFC 7-1-3 in his 11 starts.
But heading into the next game against Montreal at BMO, everyone was talking supporter shield at this point.
Yep. It was like, how can they lose it?
Yeah.
It was like, TFC are the best team in the league.
And then
they were coming off wins over Orlando, over Philly. They got a draw at Houston in a weird game. That's fine. 4-1 winners over the New England Revolution. They beat Real Salt Lake. They beat the Columbus Crew 3-0. They were hammering everybody. They come home to play Montreal, who had recently lost at home to the Chicago Fire. This was guaranteed win night at BMO Field. The buildup was all about the TIFO, the wonderful TIFO that TFC fans would bring. And yes, it was the first time that the new rigging system at BMO Field was unveiled, and it was a fantastic TIFO on display. First half, TFC getting some chances. Before halftime, though,
loving your buildup.
A bit of a scrum happens, and there's a red card shown to Montreal. Unfortunately, this was more of a detriment to TFC than it was a positive when Callum Malice left the field. Second half, TFC still badgering Evan Bush in the Montreal goal, can't find a way through. And quickly, in the blink of an eye, Nacho puts Montreal in front. And that's why TFC fans were all of a sudden humbled.
Come back down to earth a little bit.
Yeah. Come back down.
It's not going to be that easy.
It's like it.
Easy now.
Just going with themes of TFC's past. You ever feel like they're getting over, reaching the top of the mountain and seeing what's on the other side?
And then they give a look and the boot comes and hits them right in the face.
Yeah, you come back down again. But aside from the awesome TIFO that was displayed at the stadium, which was about the circus, and it was a great theme of what had been the history of Montreal visiting BMO Field in MLS matches where they had not won to that point in time, because they got the 1-0 win there. Shortly after the game, we started hearing about this two stick, which was gross and it was stupid and it was dumb.
And then the drama that, you know,
it was deplorable
that ensues, you know, in the media and everything. I mean, it'd be foolish not to say anything about it because it actually happened.
No, it was
and
a big part
horrible.
Of the season.
But it's just those things that happen off the pitch that kind of,
yeah,
you know,
and the inebriati were punished because this sign came out in their section, and it was sanctions that were to be handed out to the inebriati. More on that in a bit. But we also found some time to have some fun, as this was right around the time of the Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. The TFC Olympiad with Jonathan Osorio and producer Emil Della.
Welcome to the first annual Toronto FC Olympiad with
Jonathan Osorio.
Oh, so I got 12 events for you, and I want you to give me what guy would win the event in your mind. And don't be humble. If it's you, be honest, okay? So 100 meter, who takes it?
Right now on our team, Tassan Ricketts.
5,000 meter.
Michael Badley.
Shot put.
That's a good one. Shot put, I think I'm going to go with Nick Hagelin.
Jozy?
Jozy, yeah, man. That'll be tight for gold and silver. Nick is really strong. He's a very athletic guy, so that's why I said him. But yeah, maybe Jozy.
High jump.
Nick Hagelin.
Archery.
Benoit Cheroux.
Boxing.
Best hands. I mean, it'd have to be one of the goalies. But I don't know if Clint can box, you know what I mean? Me, Ashton. Ashton will be a good boxer.
Diving.
Sebastian Jovinko.
Fencing.
I'll take fencing.
You'll kill him if you need to, right?
It's just not a technique, so I'm all about technique. That's what fencing is about.
Golf.
A lot of guys on our team golf. I just don't know how they do because I'm not much of a golfer. It used to be Joe Bendick. He's gone. I would say maybe Danny Lovitz.
Table tennis.
Oh, who is the best? That's tough, man.
Is it something you guys play often?
Regularly.
Yeah.
Regularly. This would be tight. This would be gold, silver, bronze between Danny Lovitz. And this is not in no order. Danny Lovitz, Marky Delgado. Michael Bradley is really good at ping pong, but he doesn't play much. Ben Washiru is another one that plays not often, but is really good. So between those four, gold, silver, and bronze.
So the last two, just veterans, been around a long time, yeah. Can play the game, basically, is what you're saying?
Yeah. I've seen them play. They don't play a lot, but when they play, they're really, really good.
20-kilometer walk race. Who walks the most on the pitch?
Oh, my God. That's funny. Who walks the most? Jordan Hamilton.
Last question. Last event. Synchronized swimming. Duet.
Jay Chapman and Alex Bono. Fucking bench there.
Thank you very much.
Anything aquatics, I would go with Sebastian Giovinco. Water polo, synchronized diving, synchronized everything.
Just because diving?
Just because he's small and he looks like he would be, in the water. He doesn't carry that much.
Hmm.
Perfect splash.
Right.
I just see him as a diver. I really do. Don't you?
I think there would be some people that certainly agree with you.
Who's
Canadian diver?
Despati, I think his name is.
Alexandre Despati.
Yeah, there it is. He looks brilliant. Synchronized diving team.
September 6th, we had a TFC roundtable with Brandon Dunlop and the wonderful Danielle Emmanuel, but former TFC man Danielle Henry also joined the show talking about Canada's 2-1 loss to Honduras in the World Cup qualifying situation and a 3-1 win over El Salvador at BC Place, but it did mean that Canada's World Cup qualifying campaign came to an end in disappointment. Danielle Henry joined the show and at that time told us that he wanted Benito Floro to remain coach of Canada.
You're 23 years of age. You've been on the team basically for 4 years now. You got your first cap 4 years ago. So you're kind of like a veteran on the team. Now, in those 4 years, what has changed as far as the culture now with Benito Flores coming in and doing things the way he does it? What has changed? How do you see Canada developing in a positive light?
Well, Benito started us off as the grassroots, what he'd probably be teaching the young footballers, and we're building up something, whereas there's a system of play, formation, and a style and an identity. I think that Canada hasn't had an identity for a very long time in the way we want to do things. So when you have a coach who is so inspirational and believes in you and shows that he has that fighting spirit and wants well for the team, it's something that you really want to grasp hold on and be a part of. So at the end of the day, we just want to continue to work hard for the manager and take what he says serious, because you can see it. We've had some really good results even last year. One of them is the game against Jamaica where we won 3-0 at BMO, but these are things that he would say, like, we're going to beat them on set pieces, we're going to do this, and then when you buy into something and you really believe in it, and then you see Eddie score a screamer, and then after Marcel scores a free kick, and then, just everything starts flowing and everything looks good. Like, this is what we're capable of doing week in, week out, or every time there's international breaks, it's just that. So we get a chance to do it, we'll definitely be sound.
If the result doesn't shake out the way that everybody hopes it would in this nation and certainly on the team, it's going to take a lot of doing. It is six goal swing has to happen. Do you hope to see that Benito Floro sticks with Team Canada beyond this if a qualification to the Hex does not happen tomorrow night?
Yes, of course, because you know what? I don't really believe in changing a manager every time. Listen, I was at TFC and I had about six managers, and they're looking for a short fix. What they're doing now, honestly, Toronto is looking great. Vanny's doing really well. You can see a culture. I see a lot of the Canadian guys getting chances alongside the vets' presence of, like, Will Johnson and Michael Bradley and even the centre-back pairings. Everybody's looking really good. So it really looks good to when I watch my home club team do really well after so much years of struggle and heartache for the fans. But, no, I think that if there's anybody that should keep the job, it should be Benito. And then after, you continue to work with it. You get the younger guys involved. and we can continue to build a system of play and an identity. And I think that with time, we're definitely going to catch it and we're going to get going on an international stage.
September 10th at Toyota Park. Let's be honest, the less said about Canada's disappointing qualifying campaign, probably better.
Well, I just want to say one thing.
Mm.
I don't expect much in my entire life.
Yeah.
When do they ever not let you down?
Yeah, but you still get upset.
Of course you get upset. Of course you get upset, but it's like again.
Yeah.
Again. Yeah. Come on. I thought we were over the hump a little.
September 10th at Toyota Park. TFC head to Chicago, where Jonathan Osorio gets his first MLS goal of the season.
Ricketts. Out comes Johnson. Timed his run nicely to beat Ricketts to that. But it's a bad play, and he turned it over, and look at that! Altidore to Osorio, easy as 1-2-3, and it's a 2-0 lead for Toronto.
And this is just a horrific giveaway from Sean Johnson, but credit to Jonathan Osorio. Osorio does a good job to take his time to make sure he places it into the center of the goal. What was Sean Johnson thinking?
I don't know what Sean Johnson was thinking. We're still trying to figure that out. Maybe Chicago is too, and that's why they sent him over to New York City FC.
They're just trying to finish out the season. It was horrible for them.
Yeah, but that might be a bad thing for TFC that New York's actually got a halfway decent goalie. You love Sean Johnson.
No, okay. I like Sean Johnson. Bill Hamid, I think, is a really good veteran goalkeeper, but anyone's better than Josh Saunders.
That's
my go-to.
Yeah, Sanders.
Saunders.
You used to call him Sanders.
But it's Saunders, right?
It is Saunders.
So I've evolved a little. Mm-hmm.
You've gotten a little bit better.
A little bit. I still butcher names.
A little bit of progression from Thomas.
Hispana Copita.
TFC had conceded 29 goals up to this point, second least in MLS.
And that's where it stayed, second least in the league.
But Jozy Altidore, after the game, talking about Jonathan Osorio, it was his first goal on the season. And Jozy kind of explains very fondly how much Oso means to the TFC side.
A guy like Oso, I feel like, I just don't think he gets the credit he deserves, but you know, that's life, that's soccer, as a professional, sometimes it's like that. I just feel like he could have helped that Canadian team. You know, I think we're all pulling for Canada to kind of make the hex, but it is what it is. He's had a so-so year in terms of in front of goal, so to see him get that goal, and then also it was a big goal in the game, and it was just really happy to get a big win to kind of still, you know, put us in a place where we can still finish first.
And that was the first win at Toyota Park for TFC.
It was going to happen at any time. It was going to happen this season.
Also after that game, Jonathan Osorio was doing a post-game clip with Daniel Emmanuel. And it was a bit emotional because this was also the send-off for a Sportsnet and soccer legend in this country, Jerry Dobson.
Today has been an emotional day for us as broadcasters, knowing that it is Jerry Dobson's final day ever calling a soccer game. What does it mean to you just being on the Canadian national team and a part of Canadian soccer as a whole?
Yeah, no, it's obviously sad. Jerry's been here for so long, even before I was born, calling games. So I just want to thank you, Jerry, for all your work in Canadian soccer. Me as a Torontonian, I appreciate everything. You know, I used to wake up early in the mornings when I was 10 years old to watch you before Premier League games. So I want to thank you. And, you know, I hope that if we go far in the playoffs, you can come back to call one more game.
I mean, he is on a win streak right now. You
he
guys could
on
use
a win
him.
Streak. Yeah, he's good luck right now. So if you can stay, we wouldn't mind that at all.
I know. Thanks so much, Jonathan. Back up to you, Jerry.
Thanks, Danielle. And thanks, Jonathan, for those kind words.
Thank you, Jonathan, as well.
Let me ask you something, though. Mm. Do you think Osorio, every player likes, you know, the fans have a name, like a chant. Do you think he likes his with New Kids on the Block being the song?
Why? What's wrong with it?
It's so bad.
Why is it bad?
It's just, if that was me, you know, it'd be great to have a song that the fans, but it has to be a New Kids on the
Block.
It'd be like a Backstreet Boys
New
song.
New Kids on the Block are legends, bro.
Yeah, okay. Okay, they're legends. Okay.
Step by step.
I didn't ask for you to sing.
Baby.
You know what? I should know better. I shouldn't bring up music. I so should.
Step
one. Bozy's telling me the exact same thing in my ear.
We can have lots of fun.
Oh.
Step two.
And you're destroying me over Bieber. Bozy was
so
destroying me over Bieber. This guy's singing
do.
New Kids on the Block right now. Get out of here. This guy's singing New Kids on the Block right now.
Yeah, but I won't talk to Tim Bezbachenko about
who cares
Justin Bieber.
You're singing New Kids on the Block right now. Anything's better than that. Anything.
What? There's nothing wrong with New Kids on the Block.
You singing it, everything is wrong with that.
All right, fair. Clint Irwin was also working his way back. If you watch that Oso clip on sportsnet.ca, you'll see Clint Irwin kind of working in the background and doing some stuff. Alex Bono, he joined the show that Monday. He was on one hell of a run.
He was.
And talked about it on TFC Pitchside. What do you think you've learned since you first took over the starting job from Clint Irwin when he went down injured?
Yeah, it's something that happened really quickly, and I didn't really have time to think about it and really, you know, make myself nervous about it. So I just kind of got thrown in, and from there it's just kind of trusting yourself, you know, trusting your ability, trusting the guys around you, because the guys in front of me, game in and game out, they play so well. They put really good performances together, and it makes my job a lot easier. So from my perspective, it's just kind of learning the ins and outs of being a first-team goalkeeper and being in the net back there behind the four guys and the guys in front of them. And just kind of finding your focus and finding what you do best and just trying to do it on a game-in and game-out basis.
You know, much has been made about a goalkeeping controversy in the sense that you're playing well. Clint Irwin's an established, you know, experienced keeper.
Mm-hmm.
Given the team's record since you took over, do you expect to retain your position? Is it a given to you?
No, I don't think anything's a given. For me, especially in this little stint here that I've had to play each game like it's my last, because at any point, Clint could be healthy and the switch could be made. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's not my call. That's Greg Vanney's call. And at the end of the day, he's going to make the decision that's best for the team. And I have the full respect and trust in him that he'll do it. And whatever's best for the team is good for me, because it's a team sport. I'm a team player. And as long as we're winning games and we're playing well, then that's all that matters to me, whether I'm in there or Clinton there or anyone else is for that matter.
We also spoke with Jimmy Conrad on the same show, because Bono was playing so well. Clint Irwin was the starter from the start of the year, the guy that TFC went out and traded for to get in the offseason. They made him his starting goalie.
Connection with Drew Moore.
And all of a sudden he gets hurt, and the young kid, the young buck, Alex Bono,
proves capable,
makes a huge impact. So we asked Jimmy, former U.S. international, what it's like when you get into one of those situations, because he knew very well what it's like to be in those situations.
Now, in the many teams that you've played for, when you see the goalkeepers, right, it's an odd thing with goalkeepers, because there's only one spot open other than the players. You have a little bit more opportunities to get onto the pitch. What's the relationship like with the keepers? Because you don't want the other guy to fail, but he has to fail for you to get in there.
Yeah.
So what's that like, that relationship?
It's tough. You know, I mean, I think off the field and on the field stuff kind of blurs a little bit, because you're training hard. You do need them to make mistakes for you to get the opportunity again. Obviously, in Alex Bono's defense, you know, Clint got hurt. So it was a nice, easy way, I suppose, to get in without it being overly competitive. But now we find ourselves in a competitive situation, and it can be tense. You know, Clint obviously probably thought he did well enough. The team was doing well enough with him in between the sticks. And now Alex Bono has now made it tough on the coaches to make a decision. It's part of sports. So from a coaching perspective, they got to make a decision that's best for the team. If he's making big saves like he has been, that's going to earn the trust of his teammates. So it's a good problem to have ultimately, but it could cause some strife between the goalkeepers, who, as you mentioned, are a little bit separate. You know, they train, they have their own personal coach. I mean, as a center back, I would have loved to have a center back coach. You know, telling me these goalkeepers, they're all spoiled and get their own coach and get gloves, get to use their hands and crap.
They don't have to do all the running and stuff in practice.
No expectations. You know, they just have to be the last line of defense. And if they give up a goal, they're the goat. But it just kind of depends. You know, some players respond to it. You know, Clint can go in and be like, all right, I understand the situation, and he can push. And hopefully that push will push Alex to be better, and it'll push Clint to get better, and the team will be better before of it. Or he can kind of just throw a grenade on the whole situation, like, you know, F this. This is what I'm about. This is not why I signed. It's not why I got traded here. And can really dismantle the whole team in the locker room. So, you know, I don't expect that to happen. Clint's been a top professional for a long time, and I think he'll handle it with total class. But yeah, it does have the potential to cause some strife in the locker room.
I'm fascinated by a footballer's life, so this is why I'm going to ask you this question. What's the worst thing you've seen as being part of a team as far as competition for places? Have you seen brawls? Have you seen players not talk to one another? Has it spilled over onto the pitch?
Oh, that happens all the time, and I think that's healthy. You know, I mean, you're around each other so much, it means something to you. You know, anytime those situations come up, you get a sense that there's a negative aura surrounding it, when I just think it's a bunch of people that care about what they do and why they do it and how they do it. So I never saw it as a negative. Not that I went out today, who's going to get in a fist fight today? But I think that kind of intensity and passion for the game is important. And I think it makes you appreciate, maybe from a guy too that you don't expect it, to be like, you know what, he does care. And he cares enough that he's going to stand up for what he believes in and how he plays. And so it's not the worst thing ever. Now, if it's happening regularly, there were moments where, let's say, Eddie Johnson, who just is really emotional at times, he would get into little scraps that I thought were unnecessary, you know, and I think he would raise his hand and say the same. That's why I said his name as opposed to leaving him anonymous. But I just think that, you know, sometimes you can sense where it's just there's something else that's happening off the field that's spilling on the field. And I think most players are aware if there's some extracurricular stuff that's going on in players' lives that are kind of out of the player's control, and it's just really affecting them and stressing them out. So, man, there's so many mental components to the game that I could go on and on about that I feel like it's underappreciated. You know, we talk about development, and all we do is talk about technical and tactical, but physical, but the mental side just seems to get bypassed. Or like, oh, no, we can deal with that later. Well, no, we should be dealing with that right away, because we're trying to cultivate these players into learning how to deal with adversity, as Clint and Alex are going through now. And, you know, how are they going to handle it? And a lot of the top players that I played with when I was a kid who got everything handed to them, and then they got to a level where, you know what, they were just as good as everybody else and not better, and things weren't handed to them anymore. They couldn't handle it. They just broke every single time. Whereas me, the little engine that could, who told he wasn't very good along the way, I was used to it. I just kept pushing through, because who are you to tell me that I'm not good enough? I know what I'm doing, you know? So it's interesting. The mental side of it is really, I think, what separates men from the boys, to borrow that phrase.
There is Conradinho, who, I mean, we appreciate his honesty, telling us stories like that.
And we learned from that day forward,
yeah,
that Jimmy Conrad, yeah, likes to have a little fun and likes to talk.
Yeah, he does.
Which is refreshing to
hear.
Well,
I mean, once you're retired, you kind of, you let the reins loose a little bit, you know?
Cut all the strings, all strings are cut.
Yeah, like you kind of wish, well, never mind. But Jimmy is fantastic. And the stories that he tells,
I hate when you leave things hanging like that.
Well,
never mind.
There's some TFC guys that I would like to have on the show, and I wish they would just open up. But most of the guys that you would want to talk to are still connected with the club somehow.
Who's your number one off the top of your list?
Jimmy Brennan, right?
You want him to open up a little bit?
Yeah.
He's just getting his feet wet in this industry, though. He's not going to open up.
He's not.
No.
Danny Diccio.
He's going to stay shut for as long as it takes.
Danny Diccio's coaching TFC 3, you know?
Great. That'd be awesome.
You know, they're, yeah. So Paul Mariner, but even him, you know, like, we've had him on, and he was reluctant to really open up. Doesn't want to burn any bridges, right?
You know what,
though? Can we get John Carver on the show? That would be fantastic.
It's our fault as the interviewers when we can't get people to open up. It's not them.
Yeah.
A real good interviewer will get the person to open up regardless.
Well, you know, you're just too blunt about it with the way you ask questions, so it's difficult.
Well, but you're too soft-handed, so I got to come in with the hammer because you're all, like, fluffing them up as much as possible.
We tried with Darren O'Day, and, well, that's why we work as a tag team. You know, I fluff them up. I open them up a little bit, maybe very friendly, and then you just come, hammer down!
You know what the funny part about that is as we'll see later on in
the
show.
You're just like, Tim Bezpachenko, tell us who you're signing right now. It's like, sorry.
Is Bieber coming? Yo, Bozy can't let that go. Always telling me about that.
Is Bieber coming to TSC?
I want to know now. Don't let him in the dressing room, guys.
We appreciate Jimmy Conrad coming.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And telling us some real stories. September 18th at BMO Field. This is where things start to fall apart down the stretch of the season for TFC. A 3-3 draw with the New York Red Bulls. Of course, they're still without Sebastian Giovinco after the Montreal game.
Highly entertaining game.
And this was another moment where if you still hadn't got on the Josie Altidore train, this was yet another one where you should have.
Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore stand over this. Altidore got off. Sean Davis tracking back, I guess theoretically, to go and block that side of the goal. But he's real late getting there. Greg Vanney likes it. Bradley.
Endo wants on the right. The fans want to get him as well. Altidore trying to turn on Coley. Got through it to the flight to shot it dead. Jozy Altidore hits second goal. Toronto's third. Happening. It's not lucky. He's putting himself in a position to have something like this happen.
Wow.
Yeah, if you're not on the bandwagon at this point, you're a bitter person. Bitter.
We did,
and petty.
The free kick from Jozy was a nice surprise. I mean, not that we doubt his talent, but we just, you know, we've gotten so used to Sebastian Giovinco taking so many free kicks for the team that you never really got a chance to see Jozy do it. And he steps up to take that one against the Red Bull, and it's perfect. Inch perfect.
Yeah.
Beating a good goalie in Luis Robles. And then Bradley to Altidore to tie the game at 3 apiece. But Bradley Wright Phillips comes first player in MLS history to score to have two 20-plus goal seasons. Red Bulls, they were dropping points from leading positions like nobody's business and continued to do that in this game. It was also a game where the microscope kind of got onto Eric Zavaleta.
Oh.
Because he had some...
I was harsh, too.
Big-time mistakes in this game.
They were bad. They were really bad. They weren't just, you know...
Yeah.
They're poor. You could tell. You could tell he was, the game got too big for him in his head.
We also had the moment where TFC clinched a playoff spot, but they didn't actually. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, Greg Vanney on the show talking about the aforementioned Eric Zavaleta. So you said last night that you don't think TFCs of years past would have been able to make that kind of comeback against that kind of team, one of the other Eastern Conference contenders. What have you seen grow the most in your squad since taking over in 2014?
I think it's, there's belief, belief in each other, belief in understanding how to get results, even in big moments. You know, last night for us it's a big moment. And there was a lot of times last year where I thought we just failed to take that real step forward. And finally we did it in the New York game last year when we clinched the playoffs, but there was a number of opportunities last year that we had where we really talked to the group and encouraged them to really take the big step forward, where you turn the corner and you know that you're a team that can really win the pivotal games and get results in pivotal games. And this year I think we've done that. You know, there was a couple times early in the year where we had the chance to get a result and jump into first place. We didn't do it. About mid-season or so, and just before the Canadian Championship, we talked about as it being a team that, you know, puts teams away and wins in the moment that you need to win. Or, you know, and last night was, we didn't win, but at the end of the day, they got out essentially what ended up being two goal deficits over the course of 90 minutes to get a draw, which keeps us in first place, clinches a playoff spot, keeps us within reach of the potential supporter shield. You know, for us, that was a big night. It was a character night because there was, you know, a number of mistakes that it was easy for the group to get down upon each other or get down on themselves, and they managed to keep fighting and turn the tempo of the game around and you know, get something out of it. And I think that's, you know, not every day is perfect, and in that game we made some mistakes that really cost us, but we were able to, like I said, really stick to our plan and come away with something.
Eric Zavaleta on the second goal kind of tripped up off his feet. You know, every player goes through that. There's going to be a time when, you know, you're the GOAT. And what was said to him at halftime? And did he buy Jozy drinks after the game?
He and Jozy might have settled that. I don't know quite how that one went. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's put it behind you and you got to move on. And you know, we'll address it later and talk about what his solutions were and what are the things that, you know, he needs to just make sure he doesn't get himself into those situations again and what types of things he can find to not end up in those situations again. So, and it's a learning moment. I mean, like I said last night in the post game, as a player, I had moments that I was the GOAT, and there was moments where I had bad games, and those games, just like us as a team, they can't define you. He's had some unbelievable defensive moments over the course of the year and saving us points along the way and defending brilliantly in 1v1 situations against some of the league's best players. So he's done some great things for us. It was an unfortunate incident that cost us the goal. We've got to put it behind us, and Eric has to put it behind him and move forward. It happens, but it doesn't have to happen often, right, if we grow from it.
And then I got to catch up with Eric down at the Kia training grounds after his recent struggles.
Now, last week against the Red Bull, the second goal, the slip, it's got to be tough. Did you kind of want to run away and hide right there, or are you okay to just get right back at it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one to take. You know, nobody wants to be that person, but at the same time, you know, people make mistakes. I made a mistake and continue to build on the strong performances I was putting out before.
What does Greg say to you after the game? I know I've talked to him about it already, but, you know, he says to just look at the entire season and what you've done as a whole rather than just try to focus on that one moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think he said similar things. You know, it happens to everybody. It's a mistake. It's not a testament to the player that I am. And you learn from your mistakes. You don't learn from times going well. And it's something that I'll definitely learn from and make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Good of Eric to join the show after or to talk to me one-on-one after that moment because he was really under the TFC microscope. A lot of fans hammering him. And I myself, like I had hammered... I don't think there's one player that I have critiqued more on this show than Eric Zavaleta.
You know, it's bad enough for us if we play in a league and your buddies see you make a mistake and they're on you for the entire week. Imagine the mic, like being on everyone's radar.
Right.
And being called, you know, every name in the book.
You know, I've made some really harsh calls on Eric Zavaleta that I kind of feel bad about now that I think back on them, but can't take them back. What I will say is if you look at his season on a whole, and we'll get to more on this later, if you look at his season on the whole, from where it started to where it ended, you could say Eric Zavaleta had a fantastic year. And
that's his turning point.
There
after that mistake, that was his turning point.
There was some bad moments, but on the whole, if you look at it on the whole, Eric Zavaleta had a very strong season for TFC. September 24th at BMO Field. It's once again against the Philadelphia Union. Alejandro Bedoya with a beauty goal, chipping the keeper on this one. Justin Morrow responds with a fantastic goal, his fourth of the season. Fourth with his left foot, leads all MLS defenders. 8 goals by TFC defenders on the season, 2 more than the midfielders. Morrow with 4 and is the team's third
now,
leading scorer.
Now that's a stat with substance there, though. You know, 8 goals from your defenders. Huge. Huge goals, too.
Down the line from Morrow towards Osorio. Osorio skips the challenge. Now it's fed towards Morrow. Toronto FC find their leveler, Justin Morrow, with 20 minutes left to play.
And that was a beautiful team goal, if you can recall it. Morrow ends up with the finish. Here is Jonathan Osorio explaining everything that goes into it, though.
Justin gave me a ball down the line, and I saw that the center midfielder came out to defend me, and I knew I had an advantage there. So I went at him with confidence. I took him one-on-one, and he gave me the space. So I dribbled by him, and if I can dribble by a couple of more defenders, something will open up. And then I heard J-Mo from behind me screaming my name, so that's why I didn't have to look. By the sound of his voice, I knew where he was, and I slipped him in, and he did a great job of finishing it.
Yeah, that goal was really all Jonathan Osorio. Thinking back now, I mean, he goes through a couple of defenders, able to hold up the ball, able to allow Morrow to get into position.
Create space to set up that goal.
And create space for Morrow to set up that goal. And just another showing of...
His development has been huge.
Yeah, has developed. This is also a game where Clint Irwin was back and also a game where TFC were yelling at the referees again. I believe it was Ishmael Elfath who came back to haunt the Reds, however you want to say it. TFC thought they should have had a penalty call near the end. I'll let you listen in on Jozy Altidor, his reacts to another missed call from Ishmael Elfath.
I just try to get to the ball first, to turn and shoot. I don't know. Sometimes, you know, in our league, we have some different calls that maybe sometimes you don't agree with.
And he didn't stop there as he was jabbed at by reporters again to get more out of him because you could tell he was on the brink. But Jozy, realizing where he was, said this instead.
Like I said, in our league, the referees are what they are. I mean, they're the best referees in the world, so we're very lucky.
The best referees in the world. I think we had Kubani on the show for that one. Interesting times and interesting comments from Jozy Altidor.
They are what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
This was just one of a few games where Jozy didn't end up on the score sheet, but deserved to win a penalty in the 90 there that may have sent TFC to 3 points. Instead, it was otherwise. So going on in the background is TFC is kind of stumbling a bit here. They had a couple of draws in a row. Sure, they won against the Fire, but they had the loss against Montreal, 10-man Montreal. So it's like you beat the Chicago Fire, but other teams you're really struggling with. And your home games as well. What's going on? Sebastian Giovinco's hurt. Can this team win without Sebastian Giovinco? But at the same time, you had another storyline brewing, and it was the fans not getting into the game until late on. Sanctions put against the inebriati and word spreading out of what those sanctions were all about. And sure enough, the rest of the supporter groups join in the protest towards the sanctions. So for the first 60 minutes of a game at BMO Field, it's pretty silent inside BMO Field, Thomas. And that's not a good thing, because BMO is known for its noise. It's known for its supporter groups. It's known for its chants.
Yeah, this is not, what is it? Is it Frisco Park in Dallas? Is that what it's called? Yeah.
Something like that.
It's not Frisco Park. This is BMO Field.
And TFC players, it was becoming more and more of a topic at the Kia training grounds, and players were talking about it. Players were vocal about what the fans mean. Bradley talked about what it meant from top down, how everybody has to be on the same page and how everything works in unison towards getting the players in the right spot on the field. So going into a DC United match, TFC going with their 3-5-2 formation. But as you're heading down to the match, TFC announced, or it comes out on Twitter, that all sanctions were lifted against TFC supporter groups. And when they open the scoring, Jozy Altidore bolts to the inebriati, jumps into the inebriati's arms, the BMO leap, if you will, kind of like a Lambo leap.
You trademarking that?
No. But it was nonetheless a moment where Jozy made a concerted effort to go straight for the inebriati after the sanctions were lifted from them and BMO Field was back into its large vocal voice. However, TFC's one goal lead, not good enough. For the first time this year, they drop a game that they had taken a lead in before halftime. So they lose 2-1. But here is Jozy Altidore at halftime speaking with Christian Jack about everything that was going on with the fans.
Talk us through the celebration with the South End fans.
Yeah, the inebriati is important to us. And we just want them to settle everything with the club and be here for us. Because as you can see, when they're here giving us support, it makes a world of difference.
Now, kind of looks weird because TFC ended up losing the game, but it was a big moment.
And it's a very real moment from Jozy. And that's, you know, you're speaking about players not being very real. I think you can get real from Jozy if you just sit down and have a discussion with them. And that's him going to the fans like that and calling them out by name.
You're right.
On a national broadcast. It's huge.
October 16th against Montreal at Stade Saputo, the revenge game, back to the diamond formation, second to last game of the season, penultimate game of the season. Montreal ends up with a 1-0 lead with Ignacio Piatti, and then Jozy Altidore ties it. Then it's Piatti again on a penalty kick in the 55th minute. Montreal up 2-1. But then, with Seba back, TFC getting back into it, and really, more so than anything, you have the super sub. Another one of those mid-season additions that really made a big difference for TFC.
But it drops down kindly there to Giovinco. Curled in, chested down by Altidore. It's Ricketts, and Toronto has tied it in the 87th minute.
To go find the gate, just go create, go make plays. Delivers a great ball in, Altidore tries to bring it down, but Ricketts is quick to react and keep the experienced team that he needs ready for that playing game in the following week. That could have a huge say in the Eastern Conference playoff race.
So another draw for TFC. 2-2, they get the late point thanks to Tsaint Ricketts, as you heard the call from ESPN, Taylor Twellman. But this is a draw with Montreal. Montreal clinches a playoff spot on the day. But the big story going into the game, because of what was going on, Didier Drogba was asked to be out of the 18 because Mauro Biello didn't want him as a starter.
And for good reason.
Here is Biello.
Didier wasn't selected to start the game.
I spoke with him yesterday. He didn't accept the fact to come off the bench, and in the end, he did not want to be in the 18. Yes, there's a little bit of tightness in his back, but he was capable of playing, and he said that he didn't accept the fact that he was coming off the bench. Well, the club is going to take care of the situation. Why hasn't he been in the starting 11? If you see the performance for Mateo, I decided to give a different look to the team, to add a little bit of energy up front, the ability to transition quickly. And for me, this is basically the decision, the ability to put a little bit more pressure on their back line. This was the decision. And to have Didier come off the bench, which is also an excellent tool to have.
It was an excellent tool to have. Montreal was better with him coming off the bench. And this was a moment where, you know, as a Canadian soccer fan, I really, like, this was a source of pride for me. And I was wondering when Biello, we talked about it often on the show, how Montreal was just not great with Drogba in the starting 11.
They were shite with Drogba in the starting 11.
Yeah, basically. And Mauro Biello, a Canadian coach, having the stones to stand up to Didier Drogba, who's obviously a massive, massive star, a big part of whatever what Montreal was doing. And not only to have the stones to do that with Drogba, but even to be honest about it after the game.
Yeah.
Because Montreal could have tried to patch it up as best they could and try not to let anything get out into the media, maybe keep it real quiet, but they decided, no, let's be honest here. And I think that's good on Montreal and good on Biello.
Yeah, and it just shows how selfish Drogba is, where you're, what is he, 37 years old?
Well, don't say that to those who tributed him.
Yeah, that was
in
just,
the playoff
that
game.
That was just horrible. But he was, what is he, 37 years old, yeah. And he can't take a step, he can't take the seat?
No.
He can't take a seat for a younger player, for his team to do
better?
For a better
player.
For a better player at this point in his career.
A player that fits the system better.
Exactly.
Here was what Greg Vanney said on the situation.
I was a little surprised. I expected he wouldn't start. Surprised not to see him in the 18, and then it was pretty soon thereafter that somebody popped in and said he's gone AWOL. So I think that's unfortunate for them.
Unfortunate for them, except...
Not unfortunate.
Not unfortunate, because they are better without
him in
the lineup.
Way better team without him.
Zavaleta also made his 13th start of the season, and Sebastian Giovinco was back for TFC. October 23rd, final game of the year. TFC with a 3-2 win over the Chicago Fire. And this is big because TFC, in their 3-5-2 formation, final game of the year, and also all three designated players healthy. Sebastian Giovinco, Michael Bradley, and Jozy Altidore. Bit of a weird start. TFC go down one, but then they get back in it on a Sebastian Giovinco penalty kick. And in the second half, they pull ahead.
Would give the Whitecaps the Cascadia Cup. That game is live right now on TSM1. Giovinco couldn't make the contact there. Still an opportunity for Sebastian Giovinco. Oh, really nice done from Giovinco. And Mauro heads it in. Superb setup from Sebastian Giovinco. And Justin Mauro bursting forward to head Toronto in front.
More goals for Justin Mauro. A fifth on the year, career high for him. Sebastian Giovinco with a beautiful pass to make it all happen.
He had to trigger a bonus in his contract, scoring five goals as a defender. It's got to be worth something.
So. He is one of the big parts of this TFC team. Jonathan Osorio then scored in the 62nd minute on an assist from Armando Cooper.
Little
to make it 3-1, and then John Goosens made it 3-2, but TFC hang on for the win, and they had to hang on. It wasn't pretty at the end of this game, but they certainly did get the victory, and they finished third in the Eastern Conference to play Philadelphia in the one-game playoff, hosting it at BMO Field, as most of the match was scoreboard watching to see how things would play out in New York. Didn't play out in favor of TFC, so they miss out on the bye week thanks to their bumpy start. Or finish to the year, I guess is a good way to put it.
Yeah, below par.
Yeah.
Given what they given done
what
before that.
The summer was. You were starting to get a feeling like...
Usually it's the other way around.
Yeah, they were feeling like this team peaked too early.
Yeah.
And that was a bit of a worry going into the postseason because so many people think of the MLS playoffs being all about getting hot at the right time. And TFC didn't feel like they were hot at all going into that game.
Yeah, given usually what happens is they go on a hot run towards the end, but they're playing catch up. Where in this time, they were in the lead, and they kind of fell flat. They were soft.
Yeah, and it was a lot to do with Sebastian Giovinco being out, and a lot to do with, again, not having everyone at your disposal when you need it to reach your potential. But funny how quickly things change. October 26th.
Was there any doubt, though, in your mind heading into this game? Was there doubt heading into this game? Did you think Philly had a chance? Honestly.
I don't think we thought Philly had a chance.
No.
Even when
no.
we talked about it on the show. And St. Ricketts talked about, ahead of this game against Philly, the wild card game, TFC's second ever playoff game, how important it was to get the win going in.
Oh, it's massive for us. You know, it's setting the mentality going into playoffs. You know, we got to get into our form, getting that winning mentality, because once playoff starts, you know, it's a hit or miss. If you lose, you're out. And yeah, you know, we're excited. We're ready for the challenge.
Ready for the challenge. And boy, were they ever. With that salty taste of a big loss in Montreal in their wild card game a year ago, TFC put the boots to the Union. And it's who other than Josie to finish it off.
Struggling to get there, did so, and a first time ball for Giovinco. Couldn't take it in stride. Now has to check back. Giovinco has help arriving. Altidore! And again, Josie Altidore to finish! That should be that! Josie hits the jackpot for Toronto!
In time tonight.
Scenes at BMO Field.
See, now that was a better play-by-play. Josie hit the jackpot instead of, what was it?
Altidorable. Giovinco and Altidore, 6 goals combined versus Philly ahead of this game. Giovinco, 32 assists, which meant that he had been involved in 71 of TFC's 111 goals since he arrived.
That's crazy. That's a crazy number.
63.9%. Josie, after the game, said it was amazing. Almost feels like soccer was reborn again in Toronto. Even though it was a smaller-ish crowd at BMO Field that night, you had a short turnaround from the end of the season going into the wild card game. You didn't know who TFC was going to play. You thought for a large part of September that they were going to have a bye and not have to play in that wild card game, in that one game playoff. Instead, it turns out that they had to, and there was just over 20,000 at BMO Field, but they were allowed 20,000. The diehards were there on a Wednesday night. So tough to get down to BMO for those games, but still, those who were there were impressive, and you started to see that relationship with the fans really start to fester. And Nick Hagelin talked about that after the game.
No, never anything like that. It was just a great moment, one that you kind of want to just savor, put in a bottle, and just look back on.
And they would get a few more of those moments at BMO Field later in the fall. Ian Paul Joy of the Yes Network joined the show that next Monday to set up, or later that week, I think, on the Friday, ahead of Sunday at BMO Field against New York City FC. We set up the Eastern Conference semifinal between Toronto FC and a team they had never before beaten, New York City FC.
Now, I'm going to be straight with you. I've been dogging New York City FC for a while now because of their defensive problems, let's say. We all know that they're an offensive-minded team, same the way as TFC. But do you think that defense is worth more in the playoffs, and that the way they leak goals, you can't be doing that in the playoffs?
No, you can't. It's a great point to make. You know, obviously played myself in the playoffs and know how important it is to have shutouts in games and to defend well, not make too many mistakes, because when it does come to the playoffs, those mistakes normally are punished. And especially with the firepower that these two teams have, you know that if you make a mistake or you give up an opportunity, it could and very most likely will end up in a goal. So mistakes are definitely something I have seen with New York City team. They are a team that's obviously, as you previously mentioned, a new franchise and a new squad of players with a new coach in charge who's only been with them for this season and really implementing their own ideas. The backline has been changed pretty much every game throughout the course of the season until the remaining 10 matches of the season, where they got some consistency, they started to get some shutouts, and I think that that's when Patrick Vieira decided who he knew would be his best defensive line, but still leaking some goals. And I think that happens when you have an offensive power like New York City have. There's so many talented players going forward that love to create. Even the fullbacks that are in the team, I could think of RJ Allen getting forward on the right-hand side and Matarita on the left-hand side. They're offensive-minded players, and they want to get forward and join in the attack, and Patrick Vieira likes that. He wants his team to play offensive football. So I think that it's an offensive display, and it's almost as if you're thinking about scoring goals first before defending. Because the game is won over two ties in the playoffs, you have to be a little bit more smarter going into these games. And I think that Patrick Vieira knows that he goes into this match thinking that it is 180 minutes, not 90 minutes. So don't go crazy for the 90 minutes and concede too many goals, because it could essentially put you out of the tie. So I think that being smart for the opening 45 minutes of this first game will be the smartest decision Patrick Vieira can do. But it's very difficult to do when you've got so many offensive, talented players who can make magic happen all over the field. I think we're going to get goals. I really do. I think it's going to be another offensive display of power, and defensively, it's who makes the least amount of mistakes that will eventually come through.
That brings us to leg one of Toronto FC and New York City FC at BMO Field, October 30th, on the eve of Hallows Eve. TFC and New York playing late into the game without a goal. But finally, TFC pull in front.
Bradley lofts it up. Not a down. Chomico. Lock once. Ricketts first tunnel. Eldenor. Go! Toronto leads!
Well, for all the intricate build-up that Toronto FC have had tonight, there's nothing fancy about this. Josie Altidore, right place, right time. And makes no mistake there. Smashing that one.
Smashes it home. TFC 2-0 winners over New York City FC. That second goal, so important, going back to New York.
That was the kick in the teeth, and a hard kick, because you knew New York City FC, their defense is awful. So yeah, to get that second goal was huge.
Yeah, and remember that game. I mean, Erik Johansson starting in goal after Josh Saunders basically played every game of the season. Pirlo was out with a calf injury. Lampard didn't start the game, didn't play. This was a game where you know, New York was the highest scoring team in the league, and Patrick Vieira set them up to try and be the best defensive team in the league, which they were not, and they got beat by it.
And the key reason was David Villa being invisible.
Yeah.
Great tactical move by Greg Vanney to make him, like, every time he touched the ball, there was two guys on him. He had nothing to do. There was no space for him to move, and he barely got any touches, to be honest.
And New York City FC had no answer for the 3-5-2 formation. Nick Haglund joined us that Monday to recap the big win at BMO. Just looking at the team statistics, 84% aerial duel success for your side. You guys really handled it last night.
Yeah, I thought everyone worked together really well, and we made sure that we pressed high, and when they did kick it long, I thought it was me, Drew, and Eric did a great job of bringing the ball down.
Now, when you're a part of a three-man back line and you put together a performance like this, how happy are you guys? Who bought the drinks? What happened afterwards? Because it was perfect. It was near perfect.
I mean, it's exactly what we wanted, and I think when we say a three-man back line, it could be four or five. You know, J-Mo and Bader are also jumping in the back line when need be. But I think it's exactly what we wanted. We kind of wanted to bait them into playing and then forcing them into situations where me and Eric can step in and make an interception or something like that. So I think for us, I think we're just excited that we've figured out this formation and how we want to do things defensively. And I think at the end of the day, we're just excited about getting the clean sheet.
On the pitch, though, you guys played the New York City a couple times, and did they seem different the way they lined up, the way they played, the way they tried to stop the ebb and flow of your game? Was it different than the other times you played?
I do think it was a little bit different. I think from the starting lineup, when we saw that Pirlo wasn't going to be in there and Lampard wasn't going to be starting, I think we knew that they were going to be a little bit more defensive. I think offensively, they tried to do all the things that they normally do, just trying to play out of the back and play this ideological way of soccer that is a lot of passing. But I think defensively, I think they dropped in and just tried to clog up the center of the field and make sure that Josie and Seba weren't getting any service.
So now the lead up takes us to the second leg. Going to Yankee Stadium, TFC with a good 2-goal lead.
And that first match was a near perfect performance. No one expected what was about to happen.
Yeah, it was an absolutely perfect start to this series for TFC. But now you go to Yankee Stadium, you have no idea what can happen.
No.
It's a pinball park. It's such a small field. Everything's crazy. You know, even Will Johnson talked about it in the lead up to the game.
Tactics, I think it stays the same. For me, it's more, the word I use a lot is reactions. Being disciplined, understanding that things happen quick and the ball can be literally in your goal in a few seconds on that field, just given the tight confines. So I think the tactics are one thing and they stay the same no matter what. It's the reactions, the ability to put out fires quicker, just given that there's less time, there's less space. Guys are closer together. Things are going to bounce around. Guys are going to commit turnovers just because of the amount of numbers of defenders the opposing team can get around the ball. So reactions have to be perfect.
So going to the game, 2-0 lead on aggregate. What do we talk about on TFC pitch side? Are they going to go for it? Are they going to play their same style? Or are they going to shell up and play some hard defense?
Because you're expecting New York City FC to come at you full swing.
Don't know why I was talking like an American football coach there.
You're so in your head, eh?
Yeah,
Andrea, you're totally throwing me off. You're having conversations in your own head.
Andrea Pirlo did come back for this game in this second leg. Lampard was going to play as well.
Didn't matter.
So what would TFC do? Would they go for it? Put New York to the sword? Would they play defense? You only had to wait a few minutes to find out.
Saunders has a better palmy experience. Johansson's better with his feet. Here's Jovinko now trying to spin away, and there is the away goal. And is that the hammer from Sebastian Jovinko in Toronto FC? It would take four on the night for New York City to turn this around. Sebastian Jovinko is 5-4. Not that that matters much from 12 yards away. And Johansson couldn't get there. Jovinko's got his second. Jovinko was able to spin himself and stay onside. Will Johnson making a big run in the box. Jovinko got it away, and it sneaks underneath Eirik Johansson. Five hat tricks for Sebastian Jovinko, regular season plus playoffs.
Yeah, good night, New York. See you later, City FC.
It was over after minute six.
Yeah, it was over after minute six, and then they just they gave up, essentially. 7-0 on aggregate, setting MLS records. Clint Irwin joined TFC pitch side the next day. When you see Sebastian Jovinko and Josie Altidore get their game on and are clicking in the way that they were last night, what are you seeing? How do you feel? What is it like watching them from their own your own net? And also, do you ever have a moment in time where you feel bad for the opposing goalkeeper?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all the time I'm watching from the other end, and it seems like every time they go at goal, they're going to create something. And when you have that on your team, it's a great feeling because you know that those guys are going to put pressure on the other team. And if it was switched around, you'd be like, you know, here we go again. We got to go up against these guys, and they're bringing it at us every time. And but it really is a huge advantage for us because we know that those two guys are going to create chances. They're going to put pressure on the opposition, and it's going to open up things for other guys on the field.
David Villa had four touches in two games in your 18-yard box. Now, looked like he was frustrated, but take our listeners into, like, in-game, did you hear his frustration? Did you hear a lot of chatter and, like, the New York City FC players going at each other? Or they just seemed lost from a viewer's standpoint. Can you tell us from in-game?
Yeah, on the field, I mean, we knew that the first goal was going to be really important, and if we got it, it would be pretty much game over. So to get that first goal in the first 5 minutes was huge, and then the second one shortly after that. And after that, for their team, you know, you could tell that they weren't really complaining to each other, to the referee. It was just, you could tell in their body language that they were just resigned to the result at that point, and we just kept putting it on them. We smelled blood, and we just took it to them and made sure that there was no doubt who the best team was over the two legs.
He certainly enjoyed the view from his end of the field where he had little work to do on that night because New York was just, they gave up. Outside of David Villa, they pretty much gave up.
That match was a keeper's dream for TFC. Like, I mean, if you're on the winning end of a 5-0 result, nothing's coming your way. Nice and relaxed.
100%. Jonathan Osorio as well, as we had a long break between the two games, right? November 6th. And then
we didn't have a long break.
TFC.
And
we did a lot during that break. Exactly. From November 6th all the way through to November 22nd. We did a lot of stuff. Jonathan Osorio continued his fun appearances on TFC Pitch Side, picked his cabinet in light of the presidential election down south.
The Toronto FC Cabinet with Jonathan Osorio.
All right, so let's start off with innovation, science, and economic development. Who's the brainiac on the team?
We have a lot of stupid people on our team. Who is the brainiac?
Mind you, we have a lot of other cabinet roles need to be filled, so don't throw away some of the geniuses.
Yeah. I think I'll give that to Justin Morrow.
Let's go with finance. Who's good with money on this club?
Who's good with money? Josie. Josie's smart. I guess you would say, I don't want to say stingy, but
he's cheap.
He doesn't give money away easily. So I'll pick Josie, yeah.
All right. How about transportation? Mr. Transportation, who's riding around the best whip?
I like Benoit's Porsche. Benoit has a nice Porsche Cayenne.
He almost ran into me a couple weeks ago. Let's go with international trade. Who's running this club's international trade?
International trade? I'll give that to Clément Simonin.
All right. Like, that's a good pick.
Just for the name.
Let's get small business. Small business and tourism. Who on the club is running their small business tourism sector? I have somebody in mind, and I hope we match up here. He's a good buddy of yours.
Yeah, Ashton Morgan, yeah. For sure, for sure.
That's the club entrepreneur. I got to give it to him. National defense.
National defense, I'll have to give to Drew Moore.
We're seeing eye to eye here. Public safety and emergency preparedness.
Over his head.
I'll give that to Nick Hagelin.
Can you elaborate on this? Because I feel like his resume might not be for this position, but...
He's just making sure everybody's good. That's why...
We did see him walking out of the facility with a big box of food for his road trip. So he, in case of emergency, on the way to Columbus, he's ready.
Oh, that's what I mean. Well, that's what I mean. He's always ready to help others. So he ensures the safety of the public.
I got two more. Justice and Attorney General.
Michael Bradley.
Hands down. And Veteran Affairs, which is usually like, you know, taking care of our the vets in the club, you know, somebody who's been around a while.
I would say Will Johnson. I put Will in that position.
All right. Thank you so much, Oso. I'm surprised you didn't put yourself on the list for anything.
To get involved in politics, I'm just a resident.
Thanks, Oso.
And then we had a former captain of TFC on the show, Darren O'Dea, or O'Day. I think I say O'Day, he says O'Dea.
I definitely say O'Day, so go with it that I'm wrong.
But he joined the show, and you pestered him on some things that he was saying. But essentially, he kind of outlines just how far TFC has come from when he was captain to now, which really isn't that long of a time. Yeah, and, you know, you being a former captain with TFC, I mean... you know pretty well that even though maybe there wasn't the games of this size when you were around, the derby still had a pretty special feel to it. What are your memories of playing against Montreal?
You're absolutely right. They're big games as it is, but when you add in the fact that it's a final now, it's going to be huge. I remember being involved. I was involved in at least two or three of them, I think. I managed to score in one of them, which was great. But no, they're great. They're great games to be involved in. And Toronto has always been a place to do with the soccer team anyway, which just has massive, massive potential. It never was fulfilling that potential, but it seems now that things are right off the pitch, especially. There was a lot of problems off the pitch, but now that's right. Certainly on the pitch, things are going right. And as I said, it's just great to see.
Darren, give it to me straight, okay? I want you to be a straight shooter on this one. What is your thoughts on field turf in professional?
My opinion on it is it's rubbish. Football should be played on grass. It's a completely different surface than natural grass. It completely changes a game.
What changes?
The run of the ball, the bounce of the ball, the speed
of passes you give. When you're on a whatever you call it, artificial pitch, passing must be 100% accurate at all times, because a lot of the times the pitch will be a lot slicker, which can have its benefits, but in reality, the bounce is different. Like, listen, you grow up playing on grass your whole life. Maybe that'll change if kids grow up playing on artificial pitches. Maybe they'll get used to it. But me, I've played football professionally for 15 years, but I've played it since I was 5 years old, and it's always been on grass. And then all of a sudden, you stick me on an artificial pitch for one game. It's difficult. But this, the other side to it is, particularly now coming out of Canada and America, in Scotland, sometimes it's imperative because the weather's that bad. If you have grass pitches, they cut up that badly that you can't play on them. So I do see the argument for them, but also the physical effects it has on your body is definitely tenfold to what a grass pitch would have. But I'm not for them. I would like to see grass pitches, but I understand in certain circumstances that their needs must.
As a player for TFC at the time that you were here, I mean, a lot has changed now, and the management is better. There's a goal in mind. They look at the team and they built it properly. But as a player, especially a captain, coming into training camp and seeing what you had to work with, how did that feel? What was the level that you're speaking of?
The level when I first came into Toronto was like, there's no getting away from it. It was appalling. It was the standards of the players was really poor. Not every player. There was obviously some very good players, but it was something I got involved in quite a lot. I didn't just play on the pitch. I gave my input off the pitch, and I spoke of, at the time, that the players, some players were 26, 27, 28 years old, and they were never going to improve, and they weren't a great standard. And I spoke, Toronto is a massive city. They don't have enough young players coming through into their team. And now you see people like Jonathan Azzorri, who's a massive player, and he broke through the year I was there, and you could tell he was special, and he's gone on to, it was safe for Phillips, potentially still got plenty more to go. But it's completely changed, and that for the better. And it was, for the size of the club, the facilities it has, it really, really was run. It was run poorly. I tried to give my input at the time. I'd like to think that some of it was listened to, but certainly now you can see the right people are in charge, and they brought in the right players, and that's all shown on the pitch.
And finally, we also had Evan Bush, keeper of the Montreal Impact, TFC's next opponent in these playoffs, on the show. And while we did talk to him a lot about the games and stuff, really the highlight to come out of it was his advice for beer league goalkeeping. Hey, Evan, a couple of weeks ago when we did talk to Clint Irwin and Alex Bono, we asked them, at least I asked them, to give my partner here, Thomas, some advice, because he is a beer league goalie.
Fantastic.
And he
goalie.
Could use all the help that he can get. So is there any words of wisdom that you can help our beer league netminder here in Thomas Michalakos?
I saw a tweet or something, I think it was last year, said, I think it was a Romanian goalkeeper many years ago. His warm-up was smoke a cigarette to calm the nerves and take a shot to warm up the muscles. So if you're a beer league goalkeeper, I feel like that's a pretty good way to start.
Why, thank you.
It's the best advice I think we could have gotten. Thanks so much for this, Evan. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for the time.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Evan Bush. So it would be Uzo and a Belmont, right?
Yeah, but I didn't take his advice because, you know, if I did, you know, he was on the losing end of what's to come right now.
November 22nd, Montreal at the Big O. We made the road trip. We did the 401 Derby.
Big night for TFC Pitchside.
It was a big night for TFC Pitchside. We did a Facebook Live show from the Big O, which was fun. But
started off bad, though.
That game was kind of gross at the start. Yes, you will remember. Dominic Aduro, Mateo Mancosu, Ambrose Yongo made it 3-0 after 53 minutes of play. But Jozy Altidore got TFC back in just 5 minutes after that. El Capitan puts TFC back in the conversation.
Toronto again. Altidore hustling his way through. Ricketts for Bradley.
And that was it. Back within one. That was incredible. That was a scene. 61,000 people, essentially. I mean, it was fantastic. Of course, the game started late. We don't want to dwell on that, though. I mean, there's been jokes already made.
Yeah.
The 18-yard box.
We'd just know. Be repeating ourselves at this point.
Right. But it was a fantastic, fantastic scene there in Montreal. Otherwise, the screw-ups of the groundskeepers.
Forget about the screw-ups of the groundskeepers. The screw-ups of practically everyone that was working there that we had to, you know, come into contact with about our booths, yeah. about our setup, everything. The parking garage, everything was everywhere.
We did 3 shows in 3 days. It was impressive on our end how much work we could put out, but we tried to give you the best coverage we possibly could. And then November 30th, Montreal at BMO Field, the classic of all classics, maybe... It is the best soccer game, at least club game, ever played in this country. And I had the opportunity to actually call it. It was amazing. Record 12 goals in 2 legs. 7-5, TFC end up winning on aggregate.
Look, how many games have you been live all over the world, wherever, whatever team? Have you been to a lot of games live?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been to plenty of games live.
Yeah.
Been to Anfield, been to Belgium, been to Amsterdam Arena, everywhere. This was the best game. Atmosphere-wise, the play on the pitch, just everything. Everything was brilliant. To be there, at that's going to go down for the ages for TFC fans, game.
These are the stories you will tell to your grandkids about where not...
Hopefully TFC have won the league by then, like have won MLS Cup by then.
Right.
These stories that I will be telling my grandkids, they'll be like, oh yeah, they've won 10 by that point, but you know.
This was the launching pad for soccer in Canada.
Yeah. Absolutely. That game was magic.
I think a lot of soccer fans were born out of that game, and I had the lucky chance to call it.
Oh, great job.
I mean, there's the Armando Cooper goal. Sure. We know how that sounds.
That's going down in your history of game calls.
But the winning goal was certainly a special one because Sebastian Giovinco leaves the game injured, something that was a bit of foreshadowing toward the final in extra time, but 92 seconds after coming off the bench, the Frenchman makes the difference.
Here is Justin Morrow trying to play a ball in. He ends up playing it back for Michael Bradley. BMO Field urges him to shoot. He plays a short ball through to Josie Altidore, then gets it onto the right flank for Betashore. Beautiful ball in! Header! And it's into the back of the goal! It is the substitute! The Frenchman, Benoit Cheroux!
Jimmy Brennan in the background laughing. I don't know if he's laughing at me or if he's laughing because we were just talking about Benoit Cheroux and he ends up scoring the goal. And maybe it's just joy, pure joy from Jim Brennan. I don't know.
Well, it's definitely pure joy from you. And you can see the difference between a play-by-play guy that's actually invested into the sport and into the team. It comes out in your voice when you're making that call, how much it meant.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see like my... how I was in the small, tiny little radio booth that we had. We're basically all standing on top of each other the entire time. I got real close to Jimmy Brennan that night. Like we're close now, you know?
Were you sitting on his lap?
Well, basically. it got pretty tight in there. What a game it was. Josie Altidore, first player with 5 goals in 5 straight pro season games. It just an incredible night. We don't need to tell you that. If you were there, you know it. It was fantastic. Then you went to the final at BMO Field against the Seattle Sounders, and they lost 5-4 on penalties.
Can we just end there?
We
did a lot. We did a lot. Bolzi's in our ear saying we did a lot, and we did do a lot, but it's hard to even reminisce about that game because it hurt so much.
We had Julie Stewart Binks in studio. We did lots of stuff in the lead up to that game. Against the Seattle Sounders. We were at Don Garber's State of the Union here in Toronto. They made a stupid Audi car that was painted green, white, and red, not for Sebastian Giovinco, but for the colors of the Sounders and TFC.
It looked like an Italian flag.
Yeah, we had a round table before the game with Matt Pence and Kurt Larson. We covered this from every which way possible, and I would say we were more entertaining than the actual game. But c'est la vie. You know what they say in sports. Losing game 7 of the championship is better for business than it is to win it.
What's done is done.
So TFC starting up preseason again pretty soon. There's a highlight of the final. I'd like to hear this.
This one's for you, Brian. We've seen Ziggy walking around the training ground. I'm not sure if you've seen him yet. I'm just wondering, do you think he's played a bigger role or you've played a bigger role in Seattle being here today?
Well, when I see him, I'm going to give him a big hug.
Mm-hmm.
I think your question's a little unfair.
Well,
because I think both of us have done
it's my job.
Very good job of putting this franchise into this position.
Right. They're both day oneers, Siggy Schmid and Brian Schmetzer. That was the highlight. That was Kurt Larson asking a question to Brian Schmetzer ahead of the game. That was the highlight. Let's give out some awards, what we all think. And let's do this quickly because I actually have to be somewhere this afternoon. Didn't expect this to take this long. But we want to give out awards before we end this. And TFC lost 5-4 on penalties to Seattle. The less said about the final, the better. If you want to go back to our final recap, do it. It's still on iTunes, still on our sportsnet.ca page as well. Let's start with a turning point in TFC season. When did we actually start to believe something was happening here? Thomas, your moment?
My moment was happened July 16th, the 2-1 loss at San Jose. Alex Bono allowing a horrendous goal.
You actually feel like that was the turning point, or once the next game happened and you saw the way they came out, the way they reacted?
Well, that was the turning point in essence, where the team was at its lowest of lows, the way they've lost the game. Things weren't going that well. And the way they responded, the 4-1 victory against DC United at BMO Field was huge. So I think that those two games combined, that was the turning point for me.
Producer Bozy says Damien Perquis mutually parting ways with Toronto FC as it opens up a spot to bring in other guys. You get
very true.
The over 400K salary hit from Perquis off the books. You're able to bring in Armando Cooper. You're able to bring in Toussaint Ricketts. So yeah, losing Perquis was a big moment. And I will say healthy. Finally, at the end of the year, we saw potential from this team. We saw, as Jozy Altidore was ramping into full form, that this team could bludgeon opponents. And once they were finally healthy and they were finally in their 3-5-2 formation, that last game, it's like they found themselves. They found their proper identity. And you felt something special brewing after that when they beat Chicago and as they went into the game against Philadelphia. The best young player. Now, usually this is under 23, but we know MLS does things differently. And our good friend Matthew Doyle does his 24, under 24 for MLS. So we'll make this, for our purposes, under 24, even though your keeper or your guy is 22.
Alex Bono.
Best young player for TFC, Alex Bono.
Alex Bono. The way he came in and had to basically take the reins from an established goalkeeper in Clint Irwin. And basically steadied the ship. He didn't get the start after when Irwin started, but those chunk of games, they accumulated a lot of points. 4 clean sheets. It was a huge ask, and he responded. And I could see him being a starting goalkeeper anywhere in this league.
Boz, producer Boz, says the same thing. Alex Bono, and yes, TFC will still have Alex Bono and Clint Irwin, at least for this season, unless a trade is worked out with an opposing team, which I assume is possible, but TFC right now don't have a backup otherwise from Bono as Quillen Roberts is off on his way. I would say Marky Delgado. He had just a shade under 2,000 minutes, 2 goals, 2 assists, 2.6 tackles per game, 1.1 key passes per game. I mean, all those are career highs. He had a major impact through the summer when Bradley, Sheyrue, Johnson, they were all hurt. Who was the one guy that was kind of a staple of TFC's midfield through the summer? It was Jonathan Osorio, and it was Marky Delgado. Those guys kind of held down the fort, even though Delgado wasn't really a part of the playoff sides that did so much special things. Without him, TFC have a real tough time getting through the summer, and he was a big part of that for me. Best addition to the team?
I went with Toussaint Ricketts.
The super sub.
First of all, he was on virtually no money, under 100K this year.
Basically, league minimum.
Yeah, and what he produced for the amount of money that he was making was crazy. He was a super sub. He scored 7 goals, but it wasn't even the goals that it wasn't the amount of goals. It was the timing of those goals, what those goals counted for. And he won points for TFC.
He was huge in the playoffs as well. The goal against New York City FC to make it 2-0, massive. Bozy and I both agree on this, Drew Moore, because you go from the worst league defense, or at least tied for being the worst defense of the league, to being the best in the league, at least in the Eastern Conference. And that is not lost on the addition of Drew Moore or Clint Irwin, but Drew Moore really settled back line and really helped some of the younger players along as well. And that goes into our most improved player. I say Eric Zavaleta. Now, as I've mentioned on the show and as I've talked about through the year numerous times, I've been harsh on Eric, and maybe that's partially because, all right, I'll come out and say it. I think we're harder on Eric because he is the nephew of Greg Vanney. And
what do you mean we're? Maybe you're harder.
Okay,
on,
yeah. I'm harder on Eric. Maybe, I don't mean to do it on purpose. I think it's just it's natural. You know,
you feel like he's gotten some easy breaks?
Not always. Actually, when you think about it, I think Greg is harder on him because they are related.
It's definitely worse being the son or a relative of a coach because he has to be extra harder on you on top of that.
I think Greg has, and Eric has said at times that he believes Greg has been harder on him than other guys. 1,877 minutes played, career high. Average two tackles, over two interceptions per game, both career highs. Average nearly 40 passes per game. Never went above 30 in the years prior. I mean, this guy, without him, TFC can't afford to lose Parkey, right?
Yep.
They can't afford to pretty much bench Josh Williams through the back end of the year. Without Eric Zavaleta, this defense maybe falls apart because Nick was going through something early on in the season as well, and he was playing with TFC too. So
you're really trying to mend the bridge with Eric Zavaleta.
No, it's just really when you look at the entire scope of what happened with Eric Zavaleta this year, he was a major part of the defense. And
he came from the lowest of lows after that game in New York.
Yeah, and he's 24 years old, still on the uptick, still a lot to learn, still does make mistakes. But for most improved player, I would say Eric Zavaleta. He's had a fantastic year for TFC.
I went with Jonathan Osorio. I think Bozy went the same with Jonathan Osorio. I think every year he takes another two steps forward, and you saw it in his play this year. And okay, yeah, you'll hear the also haters talking about statistics and how many goals did he score, how many assists. It's not only that, especially in his position. It's the amount of space he provides for his teammates mm-hmm. and his footwork skill. He doesn't get enough credit, but he can really shake them.
Yeah.
He can break some ankles.
He can, and he has. Well, not literally, but you know, he's done some pretty impressive stuff. Mr. Reliable, for me, it's Justin Morrow. I don't think this really needs explaining. He's had over 30 appearances in three straight years for TFC. 5 goals, 4 assists this year. Getting even better by the day, even though he is...
He's being overworked,
a wily
though.
Vet.
Yeah. He's overworked.
Maybe.
He needs someone there, and Ashton Morgan coming back will provide him a little bit of break here or there.
Producer Bozy also goes with Justin Morrow. You go in another direction.
Yeah, I went with Nick Haglund. What's his nickname again?
Skylander or something?
Skyman. Something yeah. about his being tall and winning every aerial duel.
That's what
duel.
His dad calls him. At least yeah. Skymaster. Skymaster.
There's not one ball that went into the back at the TFC back line that Nick Haglund didn't win. And that's huge. That's a huge stat, aerial duel, especially for a center back in a... three-man formation at the back. Huge, huge for TFC.
Yeah, and that huge goal against Montreal.
I was behind that net. I was behind the net for that goal, and it was just, it looked so beautiful.
Yeah, and his reaction was perfect, and he is set to become pretty much the most capped draft pick in TFC history, or first-round pick in TFC history. He's creeping up on Stephen Fry. MVP. This is a weird one.
Yeah.
This is a weird one.
Because normally what we do is say, okay, we all know Sebastian Giovinco is the MVP, but let's pick someone other than Sebastian Giovinco. Not the case here.
No.
I put everything Sebastian Giovinco did this season into making this pick. And I think you did as well. And I went with Michael Bradley because I think Michael Bradley, if he's not the general mm-hmm. in the middle of the pitch, the whole system goes out of whack. I don't care if Altidore had a great season. I don't care if Giovinco scored whatever, how many goals he scored, how many assists. If you don't have Bradley in the middle of the field pulling the strings, this team loses its spine.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue that. TFC did have some great stretches through the summer without Bradley.
Yes, they did.
But certainly in the playoffs, Bradley proved his worth to me more than he ever has.
Sheer distance that he covers on a pitch.
The game... either against Philly and New York, those two games, October 26th and 30th, those two games.
Even the 2-0 result, he was huge.
Bradley was incredible because against Montreal, he had moments where he wasn't perfect. But those two games against Philly and New York, incredible. And in the final, Bradley was nearly impeccable.
And even in that game against Montreal at the Olympic Stadium, okay, there was a lot of goals that went down the middle and everything, but what did the captain do?
Yeah.
He scored that second goal.
Also, I said Bradley was impeccable in the final. Just the one thing.
Penalties.
The penalty.
It was only his second penalty, I think, in his career that he took.
The penalty could be better.
Yeah.
As for myself and producer Bozy, we don't say Sebastian Giovinco either. And to me, it's all about Jozy Altidor. The way this team picked up in the second half, the way he was, to me, the MVP of the season for this team is because they don't go to the final without Jozy Altidor. 15 goals and 5 assists through the stretch of the year. Whether you want to believe it or not, I don't know. Maybe we're trying to find another way outside of Sebastian Giovinco. I truly don't think this team gets where they were without Jozy Altidor.
Whether it's Jozy, whether it's Michael, the key point is, in this season, we saw that the team is more than Sebastian Giovinco. Not so much last season, but this season we've seen it. Now, you take Giovinco out of the equation, will they make the final? A lot of people will say no. You take out his goals, take out everything.
You look at their worst stretch of the season was without Sebastian Giovinco.
True. So, yeah, okay. So maybe there you might say, well, it goes against everything.
Yeah.
Because MVP is you take that person out, and is the team better or worse? And, yeah, sure, they'll be worse.
Because they survived without Jozy Altidor. Sure, they were better with Jozy, but...
But Bradley does so much more than just, like, he doesn't score goals, but he does so much more that people don't see. That's the key for me.
I think of it this way. Maybe this is the best way to look at it. If you take any one of the DPs out, I wonder if this team is an MLS Cup contender.
Because, yeah, but that's what they're there for.
I think
for,
each one of them makes each other better.
Yeah.
And that's what went into building this team, is the makeup and the chemistry between the players. We hope you've enjoyed it. I mean, I don't think we could do any more for you in terms of a season in review show. This has been a lot of fun this season. This was our first season doing TFC Pitchside. We will be back for a second season, barring myself or you getting fired, Thomas, or producer Bozy, quite frankly. He's just as much part of this as all of us.
Or getting hired somewhere else. Who knows?
That would be the day. We want to thank Rob Henriques for the logo.
Fantastic
for the show.
Work. Fantastic.
We want to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in. We want to thank all the supporter groups for their help and for giving us notes throughout the year. At least they've given me notes throughout the year that have helped in the match previews and different things. The PR team, Anthony Cazzetto, Mike Massaro, Jeff Bradley, the players for always being gracious with their time. Devang Desai, who's now off doing stuff for EA Sports. There's a lot of people, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some. And all the guests we've had on the show, really, thanks for making this a memorable first year of TFC Pitchside. It's going to be hard to top it. We'll probably be back last week, maybe the second to last week of February to really get back into it.
We also look forward to going the distance again next season.
Yes.
December and January.
And we might have to do a quick, at least interview with whomever TFC drafts on January 16th. So check out and stay tuned with the podcast. Stay tuned with us on Twitter at DanaRachel590, at UnfitRef, at Amandelich, and also at Kubani7. Of course, we should thank Marco Kubani D'Onofrio for his help on the show as well. But that'll do it. I think you've had enough from us. So enjoy your time away until the new TFC season begins. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, Emil Delich, TFC Pitchside.
It's a pretty cool time to be in Toronto. I'm not the first person to say that. But again, when you look around the city, in terms of all of the sports teams and what's going on, it's amazing.
And so, folks, this is the final game for Sportsnet this season, and we've had the good fortune to have 5 straight wins for Toronto FC. And as you probably know by now, it is also the final game for me in my career, and it is with mixed emotions that I say goodbye. It's the right decision for me at this time, 37 years in broadcasting and 18 years at Sportsnet, the best 18 years of my professional life, and I'd like to thank the people at Sportsnet for giving me the opportunity. Great people in broadcasting, a great crew behind the scenes here with the likes of Dan Fernandez and Mike DeAngelis and Jim Marshall and all the other people, and I'm going to forget names, so I won't even bother going farther with that. But all the terrific guys, Armando behind the camera right now looking for some credit right now. But the people in this business are what makes it fun. And so one final time for me tonight, I'm Jerry Dobson, and thanks for watching.
Who would have thought I'd be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up. Wait until the sun goes down, we gon' make this bitch light up. Even when the sun goes down, I'ma